Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. In 1972, Aretha Franklin was 29 years old and an international superstar. The Queen of Soul had recorded the giant hits, big songs like Respect and Think, You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman, and more, that had swaggered, sizzled, and empowered a generation. Now, she returned to her gospel roots and created a masterpiece, Amazing Grace, recorded live in a charged Los Angeles church. It was her best-selling album ever. This hour, On Point, Aretha Franklin's gospel homecoming and Amazing Grace. You can join the conversation. Does any singer, this singer, ever really leave behind her roots? And what did you, do you, hear in Aretha Franklin's famous gospel homecoming? We're at 1-800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK, and you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. In this hour, we'll hear from two people who were there in these two amazing nights in the New Temple Missionary Baptist Church in L.A., making the concert work, legendary drummer Bernard Pretty and Pastor Alex Hamilton, who conducted the choir. But joining me right now from Chicago is Aaron Cohen of Downbeat Magazine. He's author of Aretha Franklin's Amazing Grace, a book in the Continuum Books 33 and a Third series about individual albums and their stories. Aaron Cohen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Tom. It's great to be here.
What are we listening to right here, Aaron?
We are listening to Climbing Higher Mountains from Aretha Franklin's Amazing Grace, which was recorded almost exactly 40 years ago.
Yes. And paint the picture of the scene in this church on those two nights. The church, the people, what was the scene, Aaron?
Well, this was at the New Temple Missionary Baptist Church in Watts, Los Angeles. And this was with Aretha coming back. Well, her father, the Reverend C.L. Franklin, and her mentor, Clara Ward, and her mentor's mother, Gertrude Ward, were in the house on the second night. It was recorded over two nights, and she had with her her great band with Bernard Purdy on drums, the wonderful Chuck Rainey on bass, Cornell Dupree, the fantastic guitarist, with them. And she had a choir that was led by the Reverend James Cleveland, who was as influential in gospel music as Aretha Franklin has always been in soul and R&B. It was a packed house on both nights, a lot of people from the community, a lot of people from the church. And on the second night, there was also two members of the Rolling Stones in the house,
yeah,
along with the great producer, Jerry Wexler, and a film crew. Sidney Pollack was filming the whole thing. So it was, in addition to all the microphones and recording equipment, this was quite an exciting, eventful scene.
Now,
at a small church.
At a small church in Watts in Los Angeles. Of course, the Watts riots had been in 1965. It was some years after that now. But here you had a still young woman, just 29 years old, who had in the 60s become such a superstar, definitely came up out of gospel. We'll talk about that. But her stardom and huge sales all over the place had come in soul. She was the Queen of Soul, she was called already, in some of those really earthy songs about as secular as you want to get, that you can kind of always feel the holy in there somewhere. But I guess what had people here, Aaron, was the sort of homecoming aspect of this. Not that she'd ever walked away or reputed her gospel roots, but here she was coming back in a big way after that amazing success that had made her with hit after hit after hit, the Queen of Soul. She was coming back to church.
Well, yes. She never, as you say, she never left the church. Mm-hmm. She always, I think her career always had, and to this day still has, two paths. She always had those popular hits that we all, every one of us, know and love for very good reason. But she always kept her ties to the church. Her father, the Reverend C.L. Franklin, was a very prominent Baptist minister in Detroit, a very big-selling gospel orator, and a very important political figure in the church as well. And so by receiving his stamp of approval to sing popular music, she was still largely still accepted in the church. And she's always kept ties to gospel singers. She's always followed gospel music, even though she did not record gospel music during most of the 1960s. You can hear that in her popular hits. You can hear the influence of singers like Jackie Verdell and the way she sang Respect. You could hear Spirit in the Dark, which she sang live at the Fillmore a few months before Amazing Grace. Certainly had that Pentecostal feel in terms of the beat, in terms of the rhythm, and some could say in terms of the lyrics.
But she went plenty earthy, too. I Never Loved a Man the Way I Love You, you know, Baby, I Love You, Chain of Fools, sweet Baby Since You've Been Gone, The House That Jack Built. I Say a Little Prayer. She was all there here, just a little bit of, maybe her signature, Respect.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, take F-T-C-T.
You may hear a little praise song in there. It's easy to do,
yes.
but boy, she went huge in the secular world and huge in the pop charts. She was just a straight-up superstar. What brought her back to this church on this night in 1972, and not in a small way, but in a big way, ready to do a double album two nights? What brought her back?
Well, she was going back to the music that she grew up with. She was a child performer on the gospel circuit. Her early mentors, like Clara Ward, the great gospel singer, and to a lesser extent, Mahalia Jackson, were always in her home when she was growing up. It's kind of hard to judge what someone's motivations were. It's funny because in her memoir that she wrote with David Ritz, she told David Ritz, "I've always wanted to make a gospel album, and Atlantic felt that now was the time." Now, the producer, Jerry Wexler, said in his memoir, also to David Ritz, "I always wanted Aretha Franklin to go back to the church. Finally, she decided to do so." So I think from now until the end of time, Jerry Wexler and Aretha Franklin will be up in heaven disputing whose idea it was. But I think actually an important point about that is that on the album, Aretha Franklin is listed as co-producer.
Yeah.
And very few of even the biggest pop acts of the time were listed as co-producers. You know, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones were never listed as producers of their albums or co-producers. One exception actually was her label mate, Jimmy Page. So she did have a lot of control in the sessions. She had a lot of control into what songs would be chosen, how it would sound, the arrangements. She had a big part in all of it. So she did go back to church in a big way, and she certainly was at the helm during this time.
Let's listen to just a little bit of that amazing performance. Many, many gospel songs would be rolled out on those two nights. But let's get right in here talking about control. Listen to the control here in Aretha Franklin with the title song, Amazing Grace. You can hear kind of jazz and soul, but all bringing it back home. This is just a little bit from an 11-minute, and you can hear how slowly she's rolling it out. Aretha Franklin, 1972, title track, Amazing Grace.
Amazing grace.
Lordy, lordy. Erin Cohen, they wanted to hear it, and she wanted to sing it that night.
Yes.
What a performance.
Well, I'd like to make 2 points about this performance.
Make them quick, Erin.
Sure. You contrasted with Respect.
Yeah.
Where Respect, she comes right out, you know, mm-hmm. and is very assertive at, right off
yeah.
the bat. Here she brings it out. She drags out. And I attribute a lot of her stretching it out to her early 60s jazz training, her early 60s jazz recordings. I mean, I say this as an editor of Downbeat, but
yes.
I think she brought of a lot of what she experienced on the jazz circuit.
She's working it. Hold the other thought here, and we've got to take a short break right here. Aretha Franklin, there's the title track. Oh, my goodness. We'll hear a little more when we come back. That's Amazing Grace, 1972. Erin Cohen calls it her greatest album ever. Listeners, you can join us. Does a singer ever escape, leave behind her roots? Can you hear Aretha bringing it all back home there in 1972? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Here's Old Landmark. That night, 1972. Erin Cohen, standby in Chicago. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about when Aretha Franklin went back to gospel, Queen of Soul. Aretha and her epic 1972 gospel homecoming album, Amazing Grace. She made a huge name in the 1960s with songs like Respect and Think behind us here right now. But on those two nights, January, almost exactly 40 years ago, in Watts in Los Angeles, it was something for the ages. Erin Cohen has written all about it in the new book, Aretha Franklin's Amazing Grace. It's in the 33 and a Third series from Continuum Books. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. They take great albums and go deep on all the history and interplay behind them, the music in them. He's done a beautiful job of it. He's associate editor at Downbeat magazine. And wow, is that great stuff. You can join us. Does a singer ever escape, leave behind her roots? Do you want her to? When it's Aretha Franklin, can you imagine turning back again from superstardom to light it all up again with the church choir? Were you around for this? Did you know when Aretha Franklin was topping the soul charts in the 60s that she was gospel at heart? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Erin Cohen, you call this her greatest album ever. You're with Downbeat, so we give this some weight. Why this one? She's got some great ones.
Well, she does. And, of course, she has a lot of wonderful, wonderful albums. On this one, she was able to stretch out. We just heard Amazing Grace, where she sang for 11 minutes. She was not confined to a 2-3 minute single, as we are listening to right now, as great, as wonderful as those singles are. She could be herself. She could, if she wanted to sing for a long time, she could. And she was also taking gospel in a new direction. She and James Cleveland and the band. She was bringing in a few contemporary popular songs in a very interesting way. She was melding them into the classic gospel that she grew up with in a very interesting way.
Not to mention her incredible backup band there.
They were wonderful, and it was a real delight to speak with them for this book. Her voice also was at a peak in terms of its range, in terms of its strength, in terms of its power. And I think she's also just so fantastic in front of an audience. You can hear the back and forth with her and the congregation.
Oh, yeah. It's and all that. I'm sorry, but we got callers who are just banging on the door to get in here, Erin. Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee. Good place to go on music. George is on the line. Hi, George. You're on the air.
Hi, George.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well. Erin Cohen's with us. What do you think, George?
Well, I had the joy when I was in college many, many, many years ago of working at WLAC Radio at night, and I worked for John R. and Hoss Allen and Gene Nobles. And one night, Jerry Wexler called in, and he wanted John to hear this song by this young lady. And so he sent it up, and then John called me back to the room and said, George, take a listen to this. Tell me what you think. And he wouldn't turn it up. He kept it low. He said, don't ever turn one up. Keep it low so you really find out if you like it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I went crazy. It was Respect. It was just the greatest thing I'd ever heard.
Oh, yes.
Reverend C.L. Franklin had a show on Sunday nights on WLAC, so I was fortunate enough to be able to meet him, and that was fun.
Her father,
wonderful,
yeah.
Wonderful man.
Yes.
Yeah, her dad.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not mistaken, on this album, that this fantastic album, which I bought 40 years ago, he says that she never left the church and that she was a stone singer. That's what
yes.
comes into my mind. I'm not sure about the exact wording, but that comes into my mind. But what a great, I'm so glad you're doing this show.
And to hear her bring the gospel out there in 1972, coming in behind Respect, and you got it all stacked up there. George, I just love that. We've got a little bit here from that night. Let's take it back there, if I may. This is the Reverend James Cleveland, and this is there in the New Temple Missionary Baptist Church, Watts, January 13th, 1972. Everybody knows who this is and how big she is and how big it is that she's going to get up on that stage and give her all again for this recording to gospel.
Now the young lady that we've all been waiting to hear, she's known by many names, and deservedly so, she's earned every title. But it's my pleasure tonight to just say my sister, Miss Aretha Franklin. Give her a big hand.
And then a little bit more how she opened up with Amazing Grace. Yeah, that's some Amazing Grace indeed there. Aretha Franklin, 1972. Aaron, people writing it on the website. D says, I bought this album in 1972. I have the CD now. The music plays in my head every time I think of it. Aretha is the finest singer in the world. And Jeff writes, Aretha Franklin could sing the phone book and it would sound great.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Give us a little context here. You know, there's a political context. Her father not only was, and she were not only right in the middle of a lot of great gospel singers, but they were in the midst of the political movement that was going on to then Martin Luther King, Black Empowerment, all the rest. Give us some of that setting for this, Eric.
They certainly were. Well, to go back a bit, C.L. Franklin was an early supporter of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And this was at a time when even within the Baptist Church, Dr. King was considered a dangerous guy. Mm. But Reverend C.L. Franklin sided with him. And, of course, Aretha and the rest of the Franklin family went along. Aretha Franklin sang Precious Lord for Dr. King several times. Mm-hmm. In 1972, 4 years after Dr. King's assassination, things had changed. But at the same time, a lot of the cultural empowerment, a lot of the black arts movement, Aretha Franklin fit right in there because she is her, as she would say, her father had preached black pride for decades. And so she was certainly right there in the midst of it. I think another important point is that on the album cover, Amazing Grace, mm-hmm. She's wearing the robes and the turban. She's identifying with the black aesthetic as it was and still is in a lot of ways. The whole black arts movement, she was very much a part of, as was her then boyfriend, Ken Cunningham.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a radical thing, especially within the church, to do that, even at that time. I think when Alexander Hamilton comes on, he can speak more about that. But at that time, there were no other soul stars who were dressing like she does on the cover of Amazing Grace. I mean, I don't think we could even imagine, say, Diana Ross dressing like Aretha Franklin does on this cover. So Aretha Franklin was taking a specific stand. And at the same time, there was a burgeoning sort of black liberation theology within the church.
Mm-hmm.
And she was identifying with that in a lot of subtle and indirect ways throughout the album, throughout when she sings songs like Old Landmark about this adherence to a tradition, specifically an African-American tradition, and taking pride in it. when she sings, emphasizes the line, "People, we've got to come together," when mm-hmm. she interprets the Marvin Gaye song, "Holy, Holy," on the
mm-hmm.
album.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of different meanings that can be read into this album, which is one of the reasons why it's such a cultural masterpiece.
She said in an interview once, "Daddy had been preaching black pride for decades, and we as a people had rediscovered how beautiful black truly was, and we're echoing, 'Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud.'" Aaron Cohen, stand by in Chicago. We are, shall I say in this context, blessed to have with us right now two who were there on that night as it all came down from Los Angeles. Pastor Alexander Hamilton is with us. Pastor Alex, pastor at the Community Missionary Baptist Church. He arranged and conducted the Amazing Grace concert and album under the gospel legend Reverend James Cleveland. Pastor Alex, Alexander Hamilton, thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Glad to be here.
You are very kind to spend a few minutes with us. And from New Brunswick, New Jersey, we are joined, and it's incredible, a wonderful, Bernard Pretty Purdy is with us, the drummer on the Amazing Grace album. He was Aretha Franklin's musical director for 5 years in the 1970s. Top-rate drummer, known for his invention of the Purdy Shuffle. Worked with James Brown and Steely Dan on Broadway music, in the musical Hair. You name it, he's done it. Pretty Purdy, Bernard Purdy, thank you so much for being with us today.
That's my plasma.
Thank you both.
I'm glad you're plasma. Take us back to that night, if you'd be good enough, Mr. Purdy, and the atmosphere in the church, in the hall, as you all made this happen.
Well, it was electrifying because it was something totally different than anybody ever expected. Myself, I had been around here so long that I just knew that it would be electrifying. Because the lady never, never, ever left the church. Her whole thing was spiritual, no matter what. So we were just there for the moon. Chuck Rainey, Cornell Dupree, Pancho Morales, and myself. We had already been with her several years, and mm-hmm. we knew what to expect. And Mr. Hamilton, you were absolutely superb as conductor.
Alexander Hamilton, Pastor Alex, how did you bring it all together? The crowd in the church, this band that had come right out of the secular world, and Aretha with all of her gospel upbringing, how did you pull it all together?
Well, understand that just about anybody who was black and in soul music then came through the church, so mm-hmm. we all had the same root feeling. So it was not a hard thing to do. It was mm-hmm. really very quite natural.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
what we did. Bernard, it's so good to hear your voice, man, after all these years, too, by the way.
Well, thank you. It really is my pleasure. It really is.
It's great wow. to bring everybody together right here. Did it feel liberating that night, Pastor Alex, for everybody to get to let loose in this direction? There'd been a lot
That's
of
right.
great success on the pop charts, but now this was straight-up gospel. Did everybody feel kind of, like, freed by that, Alex?
Well, I'm going to tell you something. Truthfully, at the time, it was like every day at Sunday morning. It was
Thank
like any other church problem. I mean, we really didn't think it was that big a deal.
Huh.
I mean, we knew, of course, Aretha was who she was,
mm-hmm.
and we were all glad just to be in her presence, but she had already by then become the Aretha Franklin.
Yes.
But in the same token, for what we were doing, it was like any Sunday morning. Or any 3:30 afternoon service at any given Baptist church in the country.
Yes, fair enough. But at the same time, Bernard Purdy, this was now Aretha Franklin, who had conquered the world on the pop charts, bringing it back here.
Oh yes,
huh?
But
oh, yeah.
It wasn't just the pop charts. It wasn't. I think more than ever, she was making a statement just to let the world know. I never left my roots.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
I think more than anything, that's what it really came down to. She never left her roots, and she wanted people to know that. And, yeah. you know, yes, you make money in R&B and all that other stuff, but you can do the same thing in gospel as well.
You know, Aaron Cohen, I hear that so yes. strong in this album. I, to me, Pretty Purdy's right on the money there. I mean, you can hear Aretha saying, "I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. I haven't gone away. Listen, I'm here."
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Yes,
Tom absolutely is right.
I had the occasion. I was at that time, by the way, I was arranger and conductor for Lola Falana, and was traveling mm-hmm. all over the place with her. And it was soon after the album came out that I happened to be in Chicago with Lola, and we had just gotten off stage, and somebody, a lady came up to me, and she says, "Are you the same Alexander Hamilton that did the Aretha Franklin album?" I said, "Yes." She said, "Well, are you not, you're not in church anymore?" I said, I'll be playing at my church this Sunday." And she said, "Well, how do you equate that?" I said, "Honey, this is what I do for my living, and this is what I do for my life."
Hey, let me get a caller in here right here from Charlotte, North Carolina. Paul, you're on with Pastor Alex, Pretty Purdy, and Aaron Cohen. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Oh, you just can't imagine the thrill. I came up in Chicago. I was in Chicago at the time. But Aretha, Tom, you asked, what was it like back then? Mm-hmm. You know, was it really, did you really realize what you had and how great she was? Mm-hmm. And I got to be honest, no, you didn't, but you enjoyed it. You really did. You just, it's like youth. You can't think about how it's going to be later. You just have to innocently enjoy it. And Aretha was so innocently enjoyed. Oh, but now, I'm 73 years old now.
Yeah.
I heard the excerpt of Amazing Grace. Hey, I'm grown, strong, tough guy, but I had to pull over and cry.
Yeah.
I was in my car.
I'm with you, Paul. I'm with you.
That's how powerful that is. So I just wanted to offer that little bit of comment there. Aretha was so great that, no, you can't appreciate back during the time. It's mostly appreciated now. And that's how it is for me, and I think I'm representative of a whole lot of us that came along that time. So Paul, I just wanted to share that.
I appreciate you sharing that, Paul, and you drive safe.
Thank
there.
You.
Tears in your eyes with Amazing Grace. Pretty Purdy, we just got you for another couple of minutes here. Tell us more. Tell us more about that night. I mean, there you were, Alexander, too, and we'll have a bit more. But the way the crowd interacted, the way Aretha brought all that pride of accomplishment into that church, the way the music unfolded. Tell us more about that night.
Well, like you said, the night was, first of all, magical, because most people didn't know what Aretha could really do.
Mm-hmm.
The other part of that is that the crowd itself, everybody in there, if folks could have heard the rehearsal before the recording went on, anybody who was there for rehearsal was mystified, because she preached. She actually preached before she even sang.
Yeah.
Then after she sang, she preached again. Everyone there knew and then realized Aretha never left the church. But the feeling of everything that was going on in there was magnificent.
Well, and boy, when she opened up that fullness of her voice, I mean, it's so big even when she's soft, but when she really takes it up to the top of the cathedral, watch out, Pretty.
That's it. I mean, we talk about chandeliers and crystals and all that stuff busting and breaking. She's done it many times.
Bernard, Pretty Purdy, drummer par excellence, who was the drummer that night for this recording of the Amazing Grace album in 1972. What a privilege and an honor to have you with us, Bernard. Mr. Purdy, thank you so much for joining us for a few minutes here today.
It's my pleasure.
And thank you for taking part in this book, too.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Pastor Alex, can you stick with us for another second?
I sure can.
That's wonderful. Stand by there in Los Angeles. Aaron Cohen, author of Aretha Franklin's Amazing Grace. Stand by in Chicago. Listeners, you're hearing what it's all about. You can join us, 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point with Amazing Grace from Aretha Franklin. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point, and we're talking about when Aretha went back to gospel, or maybe we should just say came busting out with it once again on a great big album, 1972. The Queen of Soul had made her name so big. Here She Came Home, epic 1972 gospel homecoming album, Amazing Grace, recorded over two nights there in Los Angeles in Watts. Aaron Cohen writes all about it in his new book, Aretha Franklin's Amazing Grace. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. He's with us from Chicago. And from Los Angeles, Pastor Alex, Pastor Alexander Hamilton is with us. He arranged and conducted the Amazing Grace concert and album under gospel legend Reverend James Cleveland in 1972. What a performance that was. Aretha Franklin had made her name so big in so many ways, and here she was, wow, big with the gospel. You can join us. Does hearing the story, this story, give you a new RESPECT for Aretha? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Aaron Cohen in Chicago, Noah writes to us, does Aaron know why Aretha, why did Aretha record this in Watts, L.A., rather than in her family's church in Detroit?
Well, it's very interesting because Reverend James Cleveland was such a powerful figure in gospel at that time. He was, as Pastor Alex will attest, reshaping the whole nature of a gospel choir, what a gospel choir can do.
Mm-hmm.
Reverend James Cleveland was also a family friend of Aretha's from way back, kind of an older brother to her in some regards. And his church was out in Los Angeles with the great Alexander Hamilton there and so many other people. And so it was important to record it with Reverend James Cleveland, with his choir. And of course, it's a lot easier to have a choir go across town than it does to take them across the country. So that was, and also it was recorded at the Reverend C.L. Burden, who was the New Temple Missionary Baptist Church pastor in Watts, was a close friend of the Reverend C.L. Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
So she was on familiar ground at the church in Watts, too, for all those reasons.
Pastor Alex, in Los Angeles, did I just hear James Cleveland singing there alongside Aretha? Was he actually up singing with her that night?
That was him. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
What did it mean to all of you to have her come out to L.A. and do this in the church there in Watts?
It was beyond fun. You know, as I said, we all knew who Aretha was, but to us, the world was just beginning to understand her gospel roots, because we all knew her from when she sang a song called Never Grow Old when she was 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
That had been a national gospel hit in our community. And, there were thousands and thousands of black girls all over the United States,
mm-hmm,
trying to sing Never Grow Old like Aretha Franklin,
mm,
from 10, 15 years before.
You know, and she was so young when she did that. It's just incredible. Aaron, you write about what it was that permitted Aretha, you know, when others were singing kind of as ingenues or sounding like little kids. She was 14 years old, and we'll hear it in just a second. She brought such depth to this song. What was it in her upbringing that let her, even at 14, bring all of that to Never Grow Old?
Well, I mean, as I said, she grew up in the church. She grew up with the finest gospel singers in history in her home.
I mean, we're talking Mahalia Jackson. We're talking Clara Ward.
Yes.
Why were they around her in her home and in her house?
Well, because of her father. Her father, C.L. Franklin, was such an important person on the gospel circuit, and he was particularly close to Clara Ward after Aretha's mother died, when Aretha was quite young.
Essentially a girlfriend after her mother died, if I may put it that way.
Yeah, I think that's an accurate way of putting it. But, you know, these were maternal figures for her. And however, to hear her sing Never Grow Old or other songs that she sang at 14, there's something otherworldly about how she sang it. I mean, I get frightened when I hear a 14-year-old Aretha sing Never Grow Old or There Is a Fountain Filled with Blood. Yeah. There's something else.
I've got the tape of it right here. Let's let our listeners join that amazement. This is 14 years old, as Aaron says, in her father's Detroit church. She's singing and playing the piano, Never Grow Old.
Oh,
Pastor Alexander Hamilton in Los Angeles. If you heard that, would you know from that voice right there that this 14-year-old girl had the voice to be Aretha Franklin, what she became? Is it clear to you, listening?
Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, I've heard it with everybody else every Sunday morning from the time that it came out.
Mm-hmm.
That was on everybody's playlist on every gospel radio station in the country. And so we were totally familiar with Aretha. And again, her style was what we all were doing.
And she helped make it that style. Let's roll it forward to 1972 on the Amazing Grace album and that performance, those two nights in Los Angeles. Here, there's the 14-year-old. Let's go to the 29-year-old Aretha Franklin with Never Grow Old.
There we never. Is a land where we'll never grow.
That land where we never grow old. Let's get a call from Nashville again. Roy, calling from Tennessee. Roy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing this morning?
Very, very well, thank you.
Yeah, hi. Your program has been bringing back many memories for me. I did not hear this album in America. I was introduced to this album while I was traveling in Paris at that time.
Hmm.
And the album was introduced to me by my Parisian friends where I was staying in Paris.
And suddenly, what did they wind it up in your garret apartment there?
Well, we played it there in the apartment, and they asked me if I had the album, and I told them no, I was not aware of it. And they played it for me, and here I am in Paris, and they're wanting to take me out, and we're visiting and seeing the Eiffel Tower and just traveling all over. The album completely enveloped me. I wanted to stay in the apartment and listen to the album. And I played it over and over, and as soon as I returned to the States, I purchased the album. So your program is bringing back many, many very positive memories, not only of my trip to Europe, but also of this beautiful album, which touched me very, very deeply.
Roy, you paint a picture for us there with all of Paris around you and Aretha on the turntable. Thank you for that. Let me get one more right here. Savannah, Georgia. Miriam is calling. Miriam, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Terrific show.
Thank you. What do you know, Miriam?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Aretha's, and the reason I called is that we were very privileged to be next-door neighbors to Aretha Franklin in Michigan, actually in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan, between about 1999 and mid-2000.
Now, and she's not real chatty, as far as I could tell, maybe over the backyard fence, but what did you get to know of her?
Well, what we got to know of her was that she moved to the community. It was a gated community,
mm-hmm.
So I think she could manage who would come to see her.
Mm-hmm.
And we were very struck by how disciplined she is as an artist. I mean, when she was in town, she would have her arranger and, you know, others who would work with her professionally there every single day. And she'd be on her baby grand piano, either accompanying herself, practicing by herself, or having her composer arranger there with her.
Wow.
So she was not a party girl. You know, she is a very serious artist. And
but lucky,
she was very reclusive.
Lucky you, Miriam, with her discipline just over the fence. You could hear it from your next door, house next door. How great.
Yes, and we did hear her sing live, and the one occasion I recall was at the Freedom Hill Amphitheater, which is one of the outdoor venues in Detroit, and she can clearly take a song and make it the most memorable experience one has listening to that song, and so we got to hear her live in a big venue, but also sounds coming from her house.
Right next door. Miriam, thank you so much for sharing that. Here's Aretha Franklin herself. This is 2007, interview with NPR's News and Notes, talking about her gospel roots.
I am in possession of certain knowledge concerning gospel greats, having come along in the early 60s with my dad, who was a very nationally known minister, who has 38 volumes of sermons on the Chess record label, and I was a soloist with him. And I met and performed with all of the gospel greats and learned from many of them, particularly the Clara Ward singers, who were sensational.
Aretha Franklin telling it like it is and was in 2007. And here's her father, who everyone knows, who she mentions right there, on that night, 1972, when Amazing Grace, the album, was recorded. He's speaking here toward the end of that 1972 concert. Listen, he's just absolutely bursting, and as he should be, with pride.
It took me all the way back to the living room at home when she was 6 and 7 years of age. It took me back to about 11 when she started traveling with me on the road, singing gospel. I saw you crying, and I saw you responding, but I was just about to bust wide open.
Don't we all want an organ behind us like that when we speak? I want to play the Marvin Gaye song, Holy, Holy, that she sang in that concert. Pastor Alexander, was there any question that this would be part of the concert? I mean, this was not out of the traditional gospel songbook. Was there any question that it fit in?
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. Remember that, as I said, many performers came out of the church and had roots in the church. And Marvin's Holy, Holy fit right in with the message of the gospel. And that's really what makes gospel music different, is its message. And so we had no problem with that at all.
Let's hear it. Holy, Holy, Aretha Franklin, 1972. Little Marvin Gaye, as brought to that church that night by Aretha Franklin. Jessica in Jackson, Kentucky. Jessica, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
Well, I've only known of two people in the world that are doing what they were meant to do, and Aretha Franklin's one of them, because when she sings, it just does something to you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's clearly what she was sent here to do, is it not?
It is. I get chills, and like the gentleman that called him before, I cry every time she sings them.
Awesome. Yeah, I think you're right on it there, Jessica, and you speak for a lot of people when you say that. Aaron,
I would also like to point out on this track, listen to those guitar lines from Cornell Dupree. We lost Cornell in May, wonderful, wonderful guitarist, and it was my pleasure to be able to speak to him for the book, but the way he could play rhythm and lead guitar lines simultaneously was incredible, and he was a great voice on his instrument.
Alex, how do you live all the years after a night like that? is it a landmark in your own life and career? Do you always look back to that one?
Well, yeah, it was one of the highlights of my life, but I've worked with so many other stars and when I look back, each one was like, wow. Because at the time that you're doing it, it just works. And it's not, as one gentleman said earlier, it's not until you get ahead of it and get back, then you look back and say, oh, wow, that was something. But at the time, it's just work. As I was conducting the whole thing, I didn't have time to even think about enjoying it. I'm busy giving cues.
Pastor Alexander Hamilton joining us from Los Angeles. He was there conducting. Wow. Bless you, and thank you so much for joining us today, Alexander Hamilton.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Alexander, thank you so much for participating in my book, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, Aaron, and thanks for the copy of the book. I haven't gotten a chance to get
back to you, but we'll talk soon.
Get your hands on it. It's terrific. It's terrific. Aretha Franklin's Amazing Grace. Pastor Alexander Hamilton there. Thank you so much for being with us. Aaron Cohn, we're going to go out with just a little bit more from Amazing Grace itself in just a second. We've got half a minute. What should we most importantly appreciate about this album?
Aretha's voice, the group, the choir, and especially the sense of community that you can hear throughout all four sides on this album.
Yeah, I mean, it's her voice right out front, but there is a complete organism at work here, not just an organ, guitar, and all the rest. It is a body of people all making this happen, isn't it?
And you can feel it. You can feel it throughout the album.
We're so glad you brought it back and held it up for us to gaze upon it one more time, listen to it one more time. Aaron Cohn, Downbeat Magazine, author of Aretha Franklin's Amazing Grace. It's in the Continuum Books 33 and the 3rd series. Very good series indeed. An excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Aaron Cohn in Chicago. More thanks than we can share right here. Thank you so much for the book,
Tom,
and for your time today.
Tom, thank you so much for having me. And thank you to Pastor Alex. Thank you to Bernard Pretty Purdy and everybody who helped make this album and this book possible.
I guess it's right today to say amen to that. Aaron Cohn in Chicago. We'll go out with a little more Aretha Franklin, 1972. It's the song. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.